This is Eli Mandel, and I want to begin reading from a selection of poems called Minotaur Poems, which I published in a book called Trio, the first selection of poems I published. For me, I suppose, poetry begins, has always begun, with the fabulous, the legendary, the dreamlike, and I've been fascinated by the way in which legend and dream and myth interact with reality, and fascinated for many years with the image of the maze or the labyrinth or the puzzle, the labyrinth being, of course, the mythic shape of reality itself, I suppose, in which a monster lurks. I wrote these poems, the Minotaur poems, not because I was reading Greek myth, but because I saw in a newspaper a cartoon drawing of a Minotaur, a fabulous man-beast. Minotaur Poems 1. It has been hours in these rooms, the opening to which, door or sash, I have lost. I have gone from room to room, asking the janitors who were sweeping up the brains that lay on the floors, the bones shining in the wastebaskets. And once I asked a suit of clothes that collapsed at my breath and bundled and crawled on the floor like a coward. Finally, after several stories, in the stared and eyed hall, I came upon a man with the face of a bull. Minotaur Poems 2. My father was always out in the garage, building a shining wing, a wing that curved and flew along the edge of blue air in that streamed and sunlit room that smelled of oil and engines and crankcase grease, and especially the lemon smell of polish and cedar. Outside, there were sharp rocks and trees, cold air where birds fell like rocks and screams, hawks, kites, and cranes. The air was filled with a buzzing and flying, and the invisible hum of a bee's wing was honey in my father's framed and engined mind. Last Saturday, we saw him at the horizon, screaming like a hawk as he fell into the sun. Another of the Minotaur poems is called Orpheus, and it's about the poet-singer Orpheus, who, of course, was finally torn apart by the Bacchae. The Welshman by the pit, whose Sabbath voice would set the week to peace or end a day, picked over coal and said he knew within the inside of our God his transformation out of tree, the face in black faced out of coal, stamped on the walls he picked. His useful metaphor, he said, the pit shaped underneath him into black and pitied words that moved the leaves, or sang together flocks, or shook the dull and herded animals. His pity also took between the rocks some still alive, who saw the black and second hand that clawed them, and he mocked in Welsh whatever shades fell back and cursed and sang back to their second death those grave ghosts. Who found his body, and who found his head, and who wiped God from off his eyes and face? In the same early book, I wrote about my hometown, Estevan, Saskatchewan, and tried to see this small town as a kind of place where horrible and terrible and frightening, pitiful things could happen. In other words, I tried to raise that small prairie town to the level of mythology to the dimension of myth, and to see it as one sees the Oedipus story or the Hamlet story or the story of Cain and Abel. This is Estevan, Saskatchewan. A small town bears the mark of Cain, or the oldest brother with the dead king's wife in a foul relation as viewed by sons, lies on the land, squat, producing love's queer offspring only. Which issue drives the young to feign a summer madness, consort with skulls, while the farmers chorus a Greek harbinger, forecasts by frost or rings about the moon how ill and black the seeds will grow. This goodly frame, the earth, each of its sons, with nature as a text, and common theme, the death of fathers, anguished in betrayal, from the first family returns a sacrifice of blood's brother, a splintered eyeball groined in the fields, scarecrow to crows. This warns Ophelia to her morning song, body as a lyric in a pretty brain gone bad, while on those fields the stupid harvest lies.